Welcome to the 41st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and Vinny is sitting right beside me tonight. I'm a plant-based cardiologist. Vinny's a cat. I'm also an endurance athlete. Vinny's also quite the hunter. He doesn't really hunt anything except his food bowl. But anyway, I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. I'm training for a marathon and an iron distance triathlon coming up in the fall, so that's starting to creep up on me. And I've been bringing this podcast to help educate people on the merits of a plant-based diet, interview a lot of different people, people on their plant-based journey, as well as registered dietitians, have some interesting ideas coming up. Today, I interview someone that was that's a listener of the podcast. She emailed me, and we started chatting, and I thought it'd be nice to bring her on and talk about her plant-based journey and what she's doing in her area to promote plant-based wellness. And she gives a lot of good ideas. Before we get started, I'd also like to thank you for listening. I've had some nice iTunes reviews, and number of downloads is up this month to an all-time high, so I really do appreciate that. Makes me feel good that people are enjoying the episodes, and again, if people have any suggestions or things they'd like to hear or topics, I'd be more than happy to entertain that. My new website is also up. You can find it under Dr. Delaney and spell out drdelaney.com. You can also get it if you search my name. The podcasts are located there as well as Podbean. There's also some information about our office and our nutrition courses, and I'm going to try to post some recipes and hopefully get a newsletter started. So lots of fun things to try to keep up with in the future. A couple things that have happened in the news. I follow the traditional things on TV and Facebook, and you know, the big thing this week is Cecil the Lion. And I certainly disagree with the methods and you know, the killing of unnecessary killing of Cecil the Lion, but it also, and I think Cecil, you know, I guess maybe things happen for a reason. If you can take something positive out of it, Cecil's brought a lot of attention to the needless killing of an animal. He had a personality because he has a name, as opposed to other lions that I'm sure are killed every day. And certainly by the method, that, you know, it was all for greed that this person went and, you know, hunting just for trophy hunting. I did grow up in West Virginia. My father and his friends and even I, hunted. It was game hunting for food growing up. That was the way they were raised. It supplemented their put food on the table. It was thought about at that point and reverend that you didn't hunt unnecessarily. You only hunted during a season. Only the, you know, as far as deer hunting, there was a season for deer, there was a season for squirrel, there was a season for turkeys. And again, things were not shot just to shoot them, but they were shot and the animal was taken home and it was prepared and eaten. You know, I guess the justification that, you know, that at least that animal had a life before its life was taken. I don't think it's necessary anymore. You know, we certainly have access to plenty of plant food. We don't need to hunt for a living, but I guess certainly I'd rather see somebody hunt than go to the grocery store and buy some feedlot steak. But certainly none of them would condone killing something for just the pleasure of killing it. There was also appreciation of the animals. They appreciated their beauty and their habitat, and their area wasn't destroyed. And, you know, it was just a different time back then. I hope that, you know, the death of Cecil the Lion makes us think about killing animals in general and the unnecessary need to torture farm animals. And maybe we'll bring more awareness. on a lighter side, my garden is still hanging in. I think I'm going to get okra, so I'm very excited. The plants are getting big. My trees are getting big, so that's good. Training is, like I said, I think I'm less than 7 weeks to the first marathon, so my mileage is increasing. The humidity is also increasing in Florida, and the rainy season is here, so we're having to dodge some rainstorms to get out. Bike ride was cut last week because of an all-day rain, so I've been on the trainer some this week. Managed to get my swims in, luckily, and it seems to rain on the way home, so I've been really, really lucky from that aspect. There was an article in Velo News talking about endurance athletes, particularly age groupers, and the onset of arrhythmias, both atrial fibrillation and ventricular tachycardia. And it was somewhat of a lengthy lengthy article. And, you know, there's been a lot written and speculated about athletes and, you know, doing maybe marathon distance and Ironman distance is pushing your body too hard, and perhaps the high heart rates is pushing your body too hard. But none of these studies have been all observational. Nobody's really looked at the nutrition of these athletes, of whether they had any virus, whether they had any cardiac issues before, whether they were lifelong athletes, what their training plans were. You know, did they train excessively at high heart rates? Did they ignore risk factors? So, you know, did they take supplements? Did they take testosterone? So, I mean, there's a whole host of things that go into, you know, what makes athletes have problems. In addition, the arrhythmia, atrial fibrillation, is the most common arrhythmia that we see in the population as it gets older. It's secondary to valvular heart disease, and hypertension are the number one leading risk factors, you know, and there are a lot of age group athletes and weekend warriors that have high blood pressure that, you know, may be very well ignoring things. And again, people think they can out-exercise poor nutrition or out-exercise some issues. So I think it's kind of premature to tell, you know, us 45 and older, you know, to sit on the couch and only do 2 miles of exercise. I think that's, I think we need to look into things further. And in that light, when I was doing my residency, there was a cardiologist that was an avid runner named Dr. Paul Thompson, and he's been featured in Runner's World. And I actually gave him a call, and I planned to set up an interview with him to talk about atrial fibrillation and arrhythmias and endurance athletes. And I don't know his take on nutrition at this stage. I know he runs a lipid clinic. And we can probably banter back and forth about a plant-based diet, so it could get interesting. But I would like to shout out to people that if you are an athlete or an endurance athlete or a recreational athlete and you have atrial fibrillation and you'd like to tell me a little bit about your diet and lifestyle, I'd certainly like to hear it so that we can use it for some discussion with Dr. Thompson. So if you'd like to write in to me, if you have any of those concerns or know somebody that's an endurance athlete that has arrhythmias, I'd certainly love to hear it. In my practice, I don't see any endurance athletes with arrhythmias. And, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I see a lot of atrial fibrillation. So, you know, that doesn't, you know, exclude one thing or another, but I'd certainly like to hear from anybody that has some interest or some questions along those lines. I tried a few new recipes this week. I tried seitan burgers, and they turned out really good. And we served them with some barbecue sauce and some roasted vegetables, so that was a good dinner. We also had sweet potato falafel, sweet potato and chickpeas, and that turned out really, really good. So those are good recipes to look up. I found the sweet potato falafel online, and the seitan, I guess it's the seitan recipe that I used was on One Green Planet, so check that out. They have a lot of good recipes. If you don't subscribe to that newsletter, it's worth looking into because they have a lot of things, a newsletter with lots of good recipes and other good topics. So I think without further ado, let's talk with Kathy Grant and find out a little bit about her plant-based journey and what she has in common with you.
Thank you.
Well, that's good.
It's an eclectic group.
Yeah. And do you think most of the people practice a plant-based diet all the time, or are part of them plant curious? That's what I would call it. Like our meetup group, we probably have, I'd say 10%, you know, really plant-based people, and, you know, maybe another 40% vegetarian. And then, you know, we have people that are plant curious and trying to get on board for one way or another.
Oh, right. Well, this is pretty much people that are already converted. So I would say they're 95%. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say 100% because everybody, you know, people will slide occasionally. But I'd say predominantly everyone is plant-based, though occasionally someone will bring a friend who is plant-curious. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, everyone can give their little testimony to the person who kind of see if, you know, give them more information about whether or not it would be good for them. We've tried to have a couple of speakers. We've had, Dustin now is part of our group, and he wrote that book, The Empty Medicine Cabinet.
Right.
And so now he's a member of our group. And so that was fun, you know, to have someone come and speak.
So yeah.
But mostly it's just a, you know, a get together and sharing of food.
Is it get together social group? Do you think there's some degree of support? You know, the typical problems people face, you know, spouse, kids, that kind of stuff. Are those issues that you guys talk about, or is it just, okay, this is our, you know, everybody's like-minded here and we just come and do this and forget about the rest for a while?
I would say it's a little of both. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there to socialize, but then people will talk about their issues that they might be having, and it is very supportive.
Yeah, I think that's, you say it's once a month?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And
I believe the next one is August 18th.
Okay. And so tell me, did your plant-based journey start with the Engine 2 diet book and the, or how did that go?
No, not at all. I was sort of led that way through, actually, Bill Maher, of all people, is the one that got me interested, because he used to rail on about high fructose corn syrup and the evils of it and everything, and I got on that bandwagon for sure. And then one night he had T. Colin Campbell as a person on to interview, and that intrigued me, which then led me to the movie Forks Over Knives, and that really hit home. And so from there I started reading the book The China Study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell, and then Dr. Esselstyn's book Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, and you know, from there it's just sort of led on. But I did find out about the Engine 2 diet through the Forks Over Knives movie. And they had a Facebook page, but they also formed another group called the Engine 2 Extra. And it was a membership thing. But when you joined, you got, you know, a lot more in-depth information, and they had coaches that you could email directly to that would give you information. And that was a very supportive area. And that's really what started me on it, was through there, I guess.
Did you join?
I did. Yep, I did.
Okay. And was that like a month?
I did for, it was a yearly thing. And I stayed on for about a year and a half. And then I just got so busy. And by then I pretty much knew the path, you know, and didn't need it so much. I'm still friends on Facebook with some of the people that are still on it.
And that was pretty supportive, it seems.
Yes, very supportive. And they would even do challenges once a month. And in the very beginning, they would do things and try to win prizes, you know, just to really stimulate people and to try to get people to adhere to it. And so it really worked, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it, and then in a fun sort of way. What caused you to think about changing your diet in the first place?
Well, I ate healthy. I was never really that overweight. I was about 10, 12 pounds overweight, but I noticed my cholesterol level started to keep going up and up, and it didn't seem like whatever I was doing was working. I never really was a huge meat eater anyway, and I thought that I was eating healthy, but I think it was in the preparation of the foods that was really doing me in. And I bought into the whole thing of the calcium and the milk and the cheese and all that, because my mother had severe osteoporosis, and so she bought on to that, you know, because that was the era. And so I think that that really that was all a detriment. And so anyway, as my cholesterol started going up, and then I found out about the Forks Over Knives movie, then that just sort of the light bulb went on, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going to try this. And so initially, I thought I was going to be like these other people that you read about where their cholesterol level plummets, you know, 40 points. And I just knew that I was going to be one of these people because I was adhering to it rigidly. And I was really disappointed when my first blood work came back and it was only maybe, you know, 10 points or 12 points lowered. I mean, still it was lowered, but I was wanting to be, you know, one of the champions. And so then I would email one of the coaches at Engine 2 and say, you know, what am I doing wrong here? I'm following everything. And so they really are into you keeping a journal on what you eat every day. So I did that religiously, and I would send her my foods that I'd eaten for the week, and we sort of did an analysis and found, well, you need to maybe cut out nuts and nut butters and avocado. So I did that for a while, and I really did notice a big difference when I was religious with that. Now, since then, I've sort of maybe added a little bit back, and consequently, my cholesterol kind of came back a little bit higher. And it's still, my most recent was 164.
Mm-hmm. So it's still very good.
Still good, yeah. But I had gotten it down to 139.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. So when you gave up the nuts and the avocados, it went to 139.
Yes.
Well, how about cooking oils? Did that, you know, or eating out, did that play any role?
The eating out does. Cooking oil, I don't worry about that anymore at all. I can cook, I can saute in water and broth or, you know, whatever. I don't have any problems with that, but we do eat out a lot. And so, yeah, that is tough because you never know what foods are going to have hidden oil.
Right.
Exactly. And no matter how much you tell that server, look, I don't want any oil on it, but you have to go through the whole list. No, I don't want any oil. I don't want any butter. I don't want any cheese. I mean, you know, and even at that, sometimes your plate will come out and you're like, wait a minute, I just told you. I don't want this stuff.
And it's amazing when you don't use it at home and then you go out and get it and, you know, it just, you know, immediately that you're, and it seems like it's, you know, and it seems like it's swimming, but you know, it's such a difference. We were out at Christmas time and we were at a restaurant and I got this jicama salad and it came out. And as soon as I took a bite, I felt like my whole face was greased. And so I said, oh, this is floating in oil. Waiter, he said, you know, and I said, could you take this back? I said, can I have this without oil, please? Sure, sure. Uh-huh. So, you know, I waited and waited and waited a little bit. It came back out and it was still greasy. And I don't know if they tried to wash. I don't know what they tried to do. But, you know, finally it's like, you know, I'll just forget it. And so the manager comes out and he said, I just wanted to make sure you liked your salad. And it's like, well, actually, you know, it's like, I'm fine. You don't need to take it back anymore. But I said, it's still really oily. He said, well, you know, I made it myself and I just used, you know, and it's like, you know, it's fine, you know. But, people just, and I think, you know, my mom and I talk, you know, it took me a long time for me to talk my mother out of oil. You know, she's Italian and making a salad. She makes a really good Italian salad at night, you know, with oil and vinegar uh-huh. usually, and to talk her down from that. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
And now that I finally, she has, she's like, you know, I can't believe how much oil I used to use. You know, we used to use like a bottle, like, every, like, oh my God, you know,
My mother was French, and same thing, you know, the vinaigrette, and it's like, oh, that was the hardest thing for me to get rid of was having a salad without the vinaigrette, but now I find that I love a salad without anything on it.
Yeah, it's...
And for a while I tried the lemon. That really didn't do it for me, but now I have found if you ask for the little orange slices from the bar, that they'll bring that to you, and that makes a really nice salad.
Huh. All right, I'll keep that in mind. yeah, I was, you know, it's an evolution for all of us. And, you know, I'm always walking around taking pictures of stuff, you know, with my phone for talks or whatever. And I was really surprised. I mean, I knew that, you know, like Olive Garden salads and things like that were, you know, pretty heavy in the oil. But, you know, when they started selling those dressings at Sam's, and I was like, oh my God, this is 80% oil, you know? And of course people come in and, you know, what they have. Well, I just had the soup and salad and of course the breadsticks that are, you know, shiny.
Oh, right.
And it's like, why are they shiny if there's no, you know? And,
exactly. White bread and glistening with oil.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing too, like we like to go to Bonefish. And the only thing I can get there now is a plain salad. Because even their rice, they put oil in their rice. Now, who in the right mind cooks rice with oil? But they do.
Yeah, it's difficult. That makes me curious. You know, I mean, I love to, you know, there's this whole big thing with Dr. Furman, with, you know, the nuts and seeds. And of course, Seventh-day Adventists have nuts and seeds. And, you know, they have very low cholesterols. And of course, Dr. Esselstyn is absolutely none, especially if you have heart disease. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly where the ball falls. You know, I think certainly some people are certainly more sensitive than others. But I kind of think that it probably is more of about what's snuck in when people don't notice it. More so than, you know, unless they're eating a tremendous amount of, you know, nut butters and, you know, replace, you know, a turkey sandwich with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something like that, you know.
Yeah, and see, I was never doing that. Like the most, I even weighed out my wallets to see, okay, how much am I actually using? And it wasn't even an ounce. It was like less than an ounce. And then I would occasionally take maybe one tablespoon of an almond butter and put that on a bagel or something. So I wasn't really eating a lot, but yeah. And then the other thing, you know, that the book on the Blue Zones, where they talk about the Seventh-day Adventists and how much nuts they eat and how healthy they are, it was very irritating to read that.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, again, you know, there could be a, you know, maybe some nut training in their diet, you know what I mean, as far as, and I don't think they eat out very much, and, you know, so there's so much kind of that goes into it, but I've kind of, you know, I'll let people do a half of avocado, you know, on occasion, or the, you know, a few walnuts, or to put those in something as far as, I think, in a dressing, but I think as far as, you know, people, you know, having the jar of nuts beside the Lazy Boy, you know, that's definitely a no-no. It's funny because we, you know, that word a lot of, you know, I don't, you know, how to spell a lot of, you know, it's one word, a lot of. I ate a lot of, you know, it's okay, doc. I ate a lot of nuts or yeah, I know that's good for you. I ate a lot of, and it's like, well, you know, we're not going for a lot of here.
Exactly. And the only nuts I was really using was for my oatmeal, you know, because I was trying to get the omega-3 fatty acids. So I put the flaxseed, the ground flaxseed, and, you know, the little bit of walnuts on there. Of course, with all the other stuff I put in there, it's like you can hardly see the oatmeal when I'm done, but that's my favorite meal of the day.
Yeah, it is really, really good, and it's really satisfying, more so than just about anything else, and it lasts. Mm-hmm. That's the good part about it. I've just got to the point where I do, you know, the cold, I put it in the jar the night before, or even, you know, that morning of, and let it set, and then come back to it, and because I like that texture, I guess, that you can kind of chew it a little bit, you know.
And it gets a little creamier too that way.
Yeah, I think so too. So did you have a bone osteoporosis DEXA scan or anything that, you know, Did your primary care, you know, was there an alarm there that kind of got you bothered, or?
Yes. Well, I've been tested all along since my mother had it so bad. She had a compression fracture in every one of her vertebrae by the time she passed away. And so I've been, you know, really religious about doing the DEXAs. And mine has been, it was osteopenia for a long time. Then my last one, which was about, well, a year ago, they said that it was osteoporosis now. And, of course, they wanted to put me on Sozamax and all of these things. And I I should back up because a few years before that, my OBGYN wanted me on Actonel because I was osteopenia. And so I did take it for about 2 years, and then I started reading all the side effects and decided, no, this isn't for me. So I stopped, and my bones were okay. You know, I stayed with the osteopenia, and then about, like I said, a year ago when I had it tested, they said it was osteoporosis. So I'm still, though, not going to take the medicine. And then in talking with my dentist, you know, she was telling me that stuff never leaves your body and that I would never be a candidate for dental implants because of that. And so I just kind of had to weigh it all. And then in talking with Dr. McDougall, you know, he will let you email him, and he gives pretty good answers, and kind of he led me to some of the information he's put out on his website about osteoporosis. And so I've kind of changed my whole philosophy on that, and I'm just trying to do the whole food plant-based way, and I'm hoping maybe my next DEXA will show some improvement. And I do yoga like 5 times a week, and I try to use some weights a little bit, but I'm thinking maybe I'll do a little more with the weight bearing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to
see how that goes.
I was going to ask you how much weight bearing exercise you do.
I know you're really an avid runner, and I don't, you know, I've thought about that, but there's one lady, if you're familiar with her, Dr. Ruth Heydrich.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I interviewed her.
Oh, okay, yeah, she's great. I'm friends with her on Facebook now, and read her book, and, you know, I wondered about whether somebody my age could start running, but
you know,
I'm not for sure, you know.
There's a very interesting man, and I'm going to block on his name, but he's a doctor in, he's a family medicine doctor in California, and he and his wife are 80, in their 80s, and she's actually mm-hmm. an ultra marathon runner, and he runs a marathon. They've run the Boston Marathon like 45, 50 years in a row. I mean, it's just, they have this incredible, incredible streak. And he wrote a book called Roadmap to 100. And I'm, you know, I can see the guy's face and I can see her face and I can see the book cover and I'm blocking on his name. I'll have to, maybe I'll put it in the show notes and or text you with it. But he gave a lecture at the, they always have an American Athletic Association meeting associated with the Boston Marathon, and he gave a talk about, he actually did a study where he started people at 65 years of age running. And
oh my goodness.
They followed their bone scans and their x-rays and their cholesterol and their blood pressure. And the people that, you know, were running 10 years later, you know, they had no worsening of the arthritis. Actually, they had less problems than the cohort that didn't run. And his conclusion was, and, you know, he says, I tell people that you're too old not to run. And, you know, so he's an avid, you know, about, you know, moving and running. And, oops, I think it's, come here, Samantha. Come here. Samantha.
Well, I just looked his name up, Dr. Walter Bortz.
Yes, yes, that's him. Great.
B-O-R-T-Z.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yes, Bortz, yes. And so he said, you're too old not to run. So I always thought that was cute.
Oh, wow.
Because I always get, you know, abused in the doctor's lounge. You know, you're still running, doc, and, you know, you're going to hurt your hips, you're going to hurt your knees. And, you know, it's like, I'm not the one that's limping in here. It's the other guys that aren't doing anything, you know. But
yeah, I wonder about that with the knees. You know, they always talk about knees and your feet. And
well, I'll tell you, the way I look at it is, and you know, we can talk about, you know, whether, you know, marathoning and Ironman may be the extreme end of things, and it probably is, but when your joints, when you don't do anything, and especially in women, you know, after, you know, 40, 45, you start to lose muscle mass at a pretty high rate. So The joints become lax, and that's kind of when the osteoarthritis sets in, because your joints are too mobile. But if your muscles are tight, then, you know, your joints are going to be more supported. And of course, you're going to have more blood flow to your legs and everything. And so, you know, the reality of it is, I think it's good. It does take a while to build up the tendons and everything in your feet. And even on that side of things, I grew up, I was flat footed. I was I had a club foot when I was little, but I was flat footed. My mom, you know, I was kind of a hereditary type of thing. And of course I always wore shoes because of this club foot. You know, my mother was told way back when that, you know, I had a cast and then I had a corrective shoe. Then I wore those, you know, Buster Brown Oxfords. And, you know, I mean, I can even remember, I was fourth grade before I could wear, you know, I got to wear tennis shoes to, like, you know, to school. And I never, never was in my bare feet. So I think that probably contributed to me being flat-footed. But then when I started running, I actually developed an arch.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and I run basically with an arch. So, you know, so and I've done some things over time to kind of help my feet. But I am a firm believer that you can fix your feet by using them, as opposed to being chronically supported with big, heavy shoes and abnormal lifts and all that other kind of stuff.
So. That's interesting, because, yeah, I do have, I have a bunion, and so I started using, like, the OrthoHeel. And it also helped my knee, because I was having a little bit of knee pain, and those seem to help. But I have a high arch.
Yeah, so, I think that, It, again, everything just needs to be, you know, use it or lose it type of deal.
Yeah. Well, I was watching a little bit of an interview with the gentleman that just finished the 50 Ironman in 50 states in 50 days or something.
Yes.
And he commented on how much the body can withstand and how much stronger he felt at the end than at the beginning.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, Dean Karnazes, who, you know, was kind of the first Ultraman that kind of got any notoriety, you know, he ran 50 marathons in 50 days and, you know, does a lot of 100-mile races. And he, the same thing, you know, the body is capable of a lot more than we think it is. And two, you do get stronger as you go on. Your body adapts, you know, when it finds, you know, it's, I think, you know, our brains say, sit, you know, and if you do, then, you know, everything settles out. But if you don't, the body says, well, I guess we're gone. And, you know, it kind of gets on board. So I do think that there's a, you know, there's still an adaptation that, you know, any of us can get. And, you know, I'm kind of surrounded by people that, you know, are my age or older, that just, you know, I have some friends that took up marathoning in their late 50s. And, you know, and they went from like zero to, I think we'll do 4 or 5 in a year. And then there's this series, this rock and roll series, where, you know, you get, you know, these, if you do so many, you get an extra medal and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we refer to it as bling. They became bling driven, you know, and were doing all these marathons. But again, they just seemed to get better as they went on.
What you're saying is there's hope for us old folks yet.
Yeah, I think it's definitely just a number that you choose to do with the number. You know, I think in the mornings I swim with a master's group, and one of the women is in the 65 to 69 year old. She's a breaststroke champion, and she's, you know, lean as they can get. And there's another guy in his 80s, and he competes on a regular basis, you know what I mean? And we start at 5:30 in the morning. So these guys are, and everybody's, you know, you know, there's about 15 people. And then at 7:30, there's kind of another group of people that are, you know, equally of the same age groups. You know, it's not young people. It's, you know, people 45 and up. And so it is, you know, you can do, we can do whatever you want.
There you go.
Yeah, it's such a, you know, it's such a contrast, you know, from what I see in my office. So it's always, you know, pleasant to see the difference. Changing the subject. So you've kind of been on this plant-based journey. Do you live alone? Are you a cook for the household or somebody else cook?
No, I'm married. My husband is not plant-based 100%. I would say he's probably more 80%. He's he doesn't want to make the full transition, so I honor that. And he, if he wants meat, he goes and gets it. And I don't cook it. But he'll eat my meals. And then, if, like I say, if he needs to supplant it with something else, then he'll just go and pick something up.
Does he go to the potlucks?
I have gotten him to come to a few. And he'll try a little teaspoon of this and that. But he does try.
Mm-hmm. Good. You know, it's a process. You know, it's amazing how many people, the Forks Over Knives movie, the light bulb just goes on and they're just instantly all in.
Yes, and I have tried so hard to get my family to each watch the movie, even my granddaughter. And she started it and never finished it. And then my daughter, I've had her watch it. I said, you've got to watch it a second time. It's the first time the light bulb doesn't go off. Maybe the second time will work.
Yeah, I think kids for the most part, you know, I mean, there's never, you know, I don't think you can think that you're going to get a disease as a child. You know, you're going to be infinitely healthy. I almost think that knowing where your food comes from and the factory farming is more of a way to approach the kids. And, you know, then the forks over knives type of deal. And even, I guess, in your 30s, 40s, you know, a lot of people, well, I mean, there's physicians, you know, I mean, my gosh, most of the physicians I know are, you know, invincible as well. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. you know, that's a good idea for them, but I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. My brother even talks about it. I tried to get him to watch it. And he says, well, you know, we're French. we're gonna be fine. And so he slathers butter on everything. It's like, oh my God, you know, no, you're not gonna be fine.
But, yeah, and then you gotta wonder the osteoporosis in your mother, how much that was dairy related.
Exactly.
You know,
lots of cheese. Now she wasn't a milk drinker, but she did eat. You know, she ate a lot of cheese.
Yeah. So you gotta wonder and.
Yeah, and back to the factory farming thing, I've been trying to use a little bit of that. Actually, that has hit home a little bit when I showed the films that you see about the hogs or pigs or pork, you know, and what happens with that, with the gestation cages and whatnot. And so now they've given up pork. So, I'm working at one animal at a time.
Yeah, do you follow Esther the Wonder Pig on Facebook?
No.
Oh, you got to look that up, and especially your grandkids will get a kick out of it. So these two guys, I'm trying to get them on for an interview, but I can't seem to land a direct email. But Esther, they took this pig in. Somebody people thought they got a small pig, and it turned out to be it wasn't a small pig, and they decided to take it. And so Esther, I think, now tops the scales at 670 pounds. But they started a Facebook page. And so every day there's a post with Esther's picture and a caption. they talked about they were on Victoria Moran's podcast, Main Street Vegan, and they talked about, you know, their evolution and journey. And when they got Esther, they weren't completely vegan. And actually, one morning they were making bacon. And they looked over, and Esther was standing there, and they's like, we can't do this anymore, you know? It's just the light, you know, that's when the light bulb came on from them, is when they were actually, you know, frying up some baking, and, you know.
Yeah.
So, but with these posts with Esther, they've actually raised, they actually, people started donating and they raised enough money to get a farm sanctuary. So that's what they do now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's quite, you know, and I love, I mean, I really look forward to Esther's post every morning because it's, you know, it's like a Calvin and Hobbes, you know, it's just something that makes you smile every morning. And
yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it is really, really, really funny. So, you know, that's, I use Esther in a lot of, you know, it's like, well, you know, because she's like a dog, you know, and that's how they treat her. And uh-huh. She's with the dog and she has a personality, and you'd certainly never think about doing anything harmful to Esther, you know.
Right.
But you know, it's certainly a, you know, way we've grown up. But so you saw, yeah, Plant Pure Nation. When you saw the initial screening, what were your initial thoughts as far as anything that, you know, surprising in it or?
No, I was a little disappointed that it wasn't more pointed. It was kind of more, if you already know about it, then you could sort of get into it. But I didn't really find that there was any earth-shattering information in there. Whereas, like, the Forks Over Knives was just so telling with the, you know, with the science behind it. And this was more of a sort of an after story.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they demonstrate it nicely that you can, you know, you can see numbers change, but, mm-hmm, you know, I'm not so sure that that's convincing because somebody might say, well, if I lost 40 pounds regardless of any way, or I lost weight regardless of any way, things would get better even if I just cut my portions down or tried to do a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, you know, it's disappointing about the Kentucky legislature, but, you know, there wasn't a person in that room that looked healthy.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, that was really sad.
And I just don't think that, you know, they had quite the, you know, it's like, why do people change? And, you know, you want to be, you know, it's like, I want that, you know, I want to look like Dr. Bortz when I'm 85 or his wife, you know, or I want to look like Dr., you know, or be fit looking like Dr. Goldhammer, or Dr. Furman, or Dr., you know, Esselstyn, you know, I want to look that part.
Right. Or how about that other, the other doctor, I can't think of his name right now, but he's 100 and he's still mowing his yard.
Yes. Well, I was going to get him on there too. I'm trying to look him up. I'm blocking on his name as well. But yeah, Dr. Ellsworth Warham. Yeah, so he just, yeah, again, he's from Seventh-day Adventist Loma Linda surgeon that's still, you know, still going strong. Yeah, so, you know, I think
it makes me want to go to Loma Linda and check it out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's certainly, you know, that's motivating and inspirational. I don't think, you know, people say, why didn't the doctor tell me to do this? And it's like, well, or, you know, or I would have listened if, and it's like, well, I really don't, you know, I don't think somebody just saying, you know, go do this is going to cut it. They have to have an example of, you know, well, why is this radical? And it is somewhat of a radical change from the standard American diet. Why is this change for the American diet so beneficial? And, I'm not sure they quite made that point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And there's so much working against us with the lobbyists, you know, for the meat and dairy industry. It's just, really drives you crazy.
Yeah, but the, you know, there tends to be more and more out there, and I think the more and more groups that are out there that are doing meetups or going, you know, asking for, can I have this? I mean, at least restaurants, you know, some restaurants are having menus now that are, you know, well, they do everything vegan, gluten-free, you know, dairy-free, whatever. I think they're actually thinking of it. They may not have it quite figured out, but at least they're starting to offer some options. I went to I don't know, it's been a good while ago, but we went to a place called Macaroni Grill, which is a chain.
And oh, yeah. I've been there.
I asked them if they had, you know, any vegan options or vegan, you know, and they brought me this menu. And it looked like a spreadsheet from some Excel spreadsheet that was in, and it's kind of a little dimly lit, and this, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't even follow this. You know, I mean, this has this, but it doesn't have this, but it has this. And finally the waitress, she said, and I said, can I just have some pasta with, you know, tomatoes and mushrooms on perhaps, you know, and she's like, oh yeah, we could do that. And it's like, oh, thank you. Because my mom was, she said, you just order for both of us. And I really can't figure it out from here. You know, is what's what? Is there's just too hard to read. I was, you know, it was too much of a math problem to figure out what was what.
I've actually asked, you know, chefs, you know, before, can I speak with a chef? And they just can't even fathom the idea of eating a food without oil. They're like, well, it's not going to have any flavor. And I'm thinking, no, it's going to have all kinds of flavor. You're just not covering it up with a bunch of oil.
Yeah, Dr. I visited True North Health, and his chef, he asked him when he came to interview, he was, you know, he kind of stole him from some resort, and he said, like, listen, the chef said he tried for a month, and Goldhammer said, okay, so I'm giving you like a menu, you know, these, you can make anything from this book. And so he did, and not only he lost like 50 pounds, and you know, then he became then all of a sudden he became very creative and did his own book, you know. So I think once they, you know, one, get a little experience, I think the fear is, you know, they're going to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the big bottom line. They're going to get all this stuff, and you know, they think they have to have special ingredients or special this, and then they're going to lose money on it or drive other people away, you know. But it's a start.
It is. And every restaurant I go to, I try to get them to just have at least one thing on there that I could order, you know. And so just doing the best I can. And I'll even email the restaurant and try to get through to the chef and say, hey, can you just do this for me? Just one thing. Like there's a place here called The Hangar, and we like to do occasional Sunday breakfast with all the kids. And so we'll go there and I think, okay, I can have some oatmeal. No, oatmeal, they make it with milk. Grits, they make it with milk. And I'm like, can you please just make it without milk? You know, it's not that hard to do. But I emailed them, and I thought I had a good rapport going. That was a year ago, and we just went recently, and the same stuff that they had before. It was very depressing, but some of them are more willing. And like you say, the more people that are that have gluten problems, you know, it's becoming more of a safety issue, so that they are starting to offer a few things that are more healthy. I'm hoping that continues.
Yes.
And just grows.
Well,
there's a lot more of us around anyway, so
yeah,
the more people that ask for it, the more it'll happen.
Well, I'm glad you emailed me and then we caught up, and I'd love to come up and visit one of your potlucks someday. And
well, we'd love to have you up there.
Yeah, I'd be happy to speak or give my 2 cents or just bring a dish and share. How's that?
That would be great. Yeah, I'll talk to Michelle and we'll send you an invite.
All right, sounds good.
And I'll try to do it when one of them is closer, because it's kind of a far drive for me, and I know it's going to be a long haul for you. So I'll try to get somebody who's the closest, because I usually have to go over to Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not that big a deal. I fly out of Tampa occasionally, you know, sometime. And mm-hmm. My daughter used to live in, she used to go to school in Sarasota, so it's almost there. So, you know, my car knows the way pretty good, so it's not that big a deal.
Well, great. Yeah, I will talk to her, and we'll definitely send you an invite and love to have you up. And it's been great chatting with you finally.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking time.
Sure, no problem. Thanks
right,
a lot.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. thank Kathy again for taking time to speak with me. It was kind of a, I kind of surprised her spur of the moment, so she was gracious enough to speak with me. I have to agree, these potlucks and support groups are really, really important, not only for helping people that are veg curious learn and get ideas from other people, share menus, but it's often very supportive because a lot of homes, it's, you know, the so-called mixed home where the spouse doesn't eat plant-based or the children don't eat plant-based, and a lot of good ideas can be gleaned from these meetup groups and potluck groups. So I would encourage, you know, anybody in your town, you know, we have our group at meetup.com. So, you know, you can always go to that website and look for meetups in your area. And you meet a lot of people. You know, it's been a great experience for me. The people that tend to be plant-based are, you know, they're a very positive group. They're very supportive, non-judgmental. And I just think it's a wonderful way for people to meet other people. And you can go by yourself and you don't have to worry about, you know, being excluded or, you know, different. It's just a very friendly environment. So I encourage you to check that out. On the front of osteoporosis, like Kathy was talking about, you know, that is such a fear. And I think that fear has been largely brought up by the industry that invented the DEXA scans. You know, my great-grandmother had severe osteoporosis and was very bent over and ended up dying of complications of compression fractures. Ate a lot of dairy all of her life, you know, lived on a farm, cow's milk. Was a thin woman, so she certainly wasn't overweight. And otherwise, you know, she was in pretty good health, but just, you know, had severe osteoporosis. And it wasn't like she'd worked hard all her life. You know, certainly in the later years, she, you know, wasn't doing any specific, you know, just household chores, but they were farm people, so they were, you know, working. So I do believe dairy has a big role, not only in leaching calcium in a high-protein diet, leaching calcium from the bones, as you know, probably your greens intake wasn't that good. The inflammation, they ate a lot of cured pork, you know, so decreasing the inflammation that you take in or foods that cause inflammation, such as animal protein and dairy, I think will go a long way to help prevent osteoarthritis and then osteopenia and osteoporosis. And certainly the blood flow to the spine, you know, the spinal vessels are smaller than the coronary artery vessels. So if you decrease the blood flow to the spine, it's going to decrease as well. So, you know, certain people get atherosclerosis in certain areas more than others. I don't think, you know, the Fosamax, Actonel drugs are the way to go. I think eating a healthy plant-based diet is the way to go. Do weight-bearing exercises. And I am an avid supporter of Dr. Neil Bortz, you know, we should run, you know, you're too old not to run. So get out and move. I think I sell, Garmin products in my office, the Vivio Fits, and I encourage my patients to get one, get them. You can track your activity. You can, compete with your friends and family, or any of the Garmin devices. I've used them, you know, a lot of my running career, and I find them to be, you know, very reliable. But the Vivio Fit, we track our steps. You know, my mom has her Vivio Fit on, and we look at each other's, you know, our steps every day. And you know, I think it's something to motivate. It's very motivating. So I'd encourage you to check those out. That'll kind of get you off the couch and get you moving. And if you're not getting your steps in, and it can make you aware. I have a friend that, you know, is an office worker, and she notes that, you know, on days that she, you know, is in her home office, she doesn't get the steps in. So it's very important that she does, you know, good thing she, you know, she trains for Ironman. So, you know, she gets out and does her training. But if she didn't have that, you know, she wouldn't have very much activity at all. So I think that, you know, those are all good thoughts for this week. Again, if you're an endurance athlete and you've had arrhythmias, let me know. And we can bring that up on the upcoming weeks and upcoming weeks when I talk with Dr. Paul Thompson. So until then, you know, get out and move, eat your vegetables, try to look closely at your diet and eliminate processed oils and processed foods one step at a time. Just keep bringing them, you know, taking them out, subtracting them and subtracting them. And I wish you all the success in the world.